Hello, friends from Emancipated Human. I am Luis Fernando. I'm back after a hiatus, after being shut down by YouTube. So we are back, and we are in with a huge bam because I have one of my longtime heroes, Howard Behart. He's a business leader, author, speaker, and mentor. I've been following him for a while, and he's helped me understand a lot of concepts much better, servant leadership-wise. So thank you so much, sir, for being here with us today.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it.
So, I don't know if you remember, we met in Indianapolis, I don't know, about 5-6 years ago, and this was kind of funny. You were getting out of an elevator, and I was about to get in, and I recognized you. I said, "Howard, you're my hero. Can we take a selfie?" And you were like, "Sure." And so from there, all that's
I remember that, as a matter of fact, you know?
that was pretty exciting to me. So at that specific conference, you actually talked about your book that was, at that time, you have a new one, but at that time, the one was, It's Not About the Coffee. So when do you think, well, Howard was the president of Starbucks, and he's writing a book that is not about the coffee. So what the heck's going on there? Tell me a little bit about, what is it about if it's not about the coffee?
Well, you know the answer to that question. I know you do. But it's about the people. It's that everything we do in life is about people. It's not about the things we make, the jobs we have, the titles we have, the money we have. It's about the people. And any organization, whether it's an organization of one or thousands, it will always be about the people. And it's so easy for us to forget that because we get so focused on the stuff we're doing, we forget why we're here, and that's to serve other people.
That's right. And that's a very high-level perspective that, you know, a lot of times a lot of people don't get to see because we are so entrapped into, like, the daily grind that we don't give ourselves time to do that. But, like, I mean, one of the reasons why I think you're very inspiring to me is because we have a lot of things in common. You know, you're the son of two immigrants, and you know, you mentioned something at some point. Your dad didn't have customers. He had friends. And right. my dad, you know, similar situation. So how did you connect with the whole idea of servant leadership and conscious capitalism and your mission to be who you are?
Well, you know, in my early years, you know, when I was in my early teens, you know, my family's all had some kind of, my mother's family, my father's family had small businesses. And in those days, this was in the 50s, those days, you know, they were customers, but more importantly, you were serving the people in your neighborhood. And that was my dad. He served the people in his neighborhood. And so he saw them all the time. I mean, they were coming to the store 3 and 4 times a week. He had charge accounts, you know, and he taught me a valuable lesson. One day I was about 9 years old and I was in the store after school and I was up at the front counter and he was waiting on some customers and he said, "Howard, go get me a couple of baskets of strawberries." And so I went in the back and I got a couple of baskets of strawberries. I brought them up to the front and my dad took the strawberries, put them in the bag, and the customer left. And, you know, I was young, but I was old enough to recognize that my dad hadn't rung those strawberries up on the cash register. And so I said, "Dad, you forgot to ring those berries up." And he said, "Son, not everything we do in life do we get paid for. Sometimes we do things just to serve other people." And he said, "I happen to know that these people can't afford very much right now, you know, and they're not just our customers, they're our neighbors, they're our friends. And so it's my way of giving them something that they like and it's just saying thank you." And that was my first lesson with servant leadership. I didn't know what that meant. And, you know, at 9 years old, you kind of internalize that, but I never forgot that little lesson. And that kind of served me the rest of my life. And as I got older, I started to believe that number one, you had to serve yourself. You had to be okay with you. You had to take care of you emotionally and physically. But next, you had to serve others. And that serving others is about just recognizing that we're not here to sell people things. We're here to help people find solutions to problems that they may have. And that's a big difference. You know, I used to always tell our people, when you think of a customer, you think of a person that has a dollar pasted to their forehead. And if you just do something nice or manipulative, you'll get that dollar. But really what we want is we don't care whether somebody comes in with a dollar in their pocket or not. We're here to serve them anyway. And that's what I brought to Starbucks. And, I was in my mid-40s, and that's just what drove me. And I became conscious at servant leadership.
I love that. And a lot of people say, well, that model, doesn't work. It just sounds nice, but it doesn't seem very effective. But, I mean, you are somebody that took a company from 28 stores to first 400 before you became the president, right? And then to 15,000. So there's something to it.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Starbucks. I mean, Starbucks is what everybody looks at because it's global, it's famous, all that stuff. But I worked at smaller companies that I did it with, and it just kept reinforcing itself. You treat people with respect and dignity. You make sure that they're getting what they need in their life's journey, and they will give you what you need in your life's journey. And so, it's just the way that it is. Some people call it karma. And it's part karma, but it's mostly just doing the right thing for other people. And they do the right thing for you. Not, it's not tit for tat. It's not, well, you give me a, do- I'll give you a dollar, you give me a dollar. It's not like that. You give them a dollar with no expectation
Absolutely.
Of getting a dollar back. But they always give you that more than a dollar back.
Yeah, I like to say that life is a boomerang, and whatever you throw out comes back at you, even with a stronger force.
That's exactly true. That is very true.
So there's something that, it always bothers me because, I mean, you and your family have been entrepreneurs and me and my family have been. So we've been in business for like all our lives, right? So a lot of people have this anti-business rhetoric. And you wrote an interesting article. Are businesses really abusers? I mean, what do you think about this whole idea?
Well, are there people that are abusers? Yes. But businesses per se are not. It's making a broad generalization about business as a whole or about capitalism as a whole without understanding, there are companies and there are leaders and there are individuals that abuse other people. There is no question about it. But we can't live our lives worrying about those people all the time. We have to live our lives looking for the people that want to serve others, and those are the people that we want to associate with. And so when I wrote that article, it was about something that was going on in Seattle. And I just said, this is not right. This is not how I've lived my life. And it's not how any of the organizations I've worked at have lived their lives. And I think that we can get caught up in this idea that somehow that business is bad. And that's, that whole John Mackey and conscious capitalism has done a lot to help that.
Yeah, I actually got to meet John a couple of times in Raj Sisodia. Excellent product that they're selling.
Yeah.
The idea that actually like business uplifts life. Some people say, well, I have to pay for glasses. That means I have to, pay to use my eyes. I'm like, no, without the business, you wouldn't have glasses. It's
yeah.
a service to humanity.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody invented them and got paid for them. And it doesn't mean that they do it for the money, but sometimes you do the right things and you get rewarded for it. I mean, there's lots of people, social workers don't make very much money and they're helping other people. But people that make, the Google, Microsoft, they created something that they ended up getting paid for.
Yeah.
Whether they get paid more, too much or too little, I'm not going to, we can argue all day long about that. But it's not, you don't set out, Bill Gates didn't set out trying to get paid for something. He was curious about technology.
Absolutely.
And about coding. And that's what got him into the business.
Absolutely. And I think that those people, like, we come with the feet, like fire within, and we just want to do it. And that's what changes the world, no?
Right, exactly. My dad never earned more than $18,000 a year. That's the most he ever earned in his life. And, so we didn't have much. We weren't poor, but, we had some clothes and we had food because my dad was in the grocery business. Our food was a little brown. We ate the things customers wouldn't buy. But it wasn't about money to him. He enjoyed serving others and he enjoyed working for himself and being in a community.
And you know, it doesn't mean that we cannot make money, and there's no shame into making money. I mean, I think it's absolutely wonderful to be able to receive, you know, benefits of your work. Like, you
Yeah,
know,
exactly.
I mean, you probably put in 80-hour weeks for many, many years, you know, so did I, so.
You seem like you're working all the time. And, you know, people would say, well, how do you have any balance in your life? I said, the goal is not balance. The goal is integration. So I integrated all facets of my life and my work.
That's the thing that I like to tell people. It's not about work-life balance. Like sometimes work needs, you know, many more hours, and sometimes family needs a little more attention. So you kind of like dance into that.
It's a dance. That's exactly it.
So, you know, one another thing that I can relate with you is like, you know, you mentioned that you did not have a college degree, but you got to do a lot of good things. And one of the quotes that I love about you is like, I don't really like a lot of rules, but I do want people to read, you know, the servant as leader. So on that, you know, the whole idea of, I mean, I'm a voluntarist. I don't believe in initiating aggression or coercion. How do you get people to understand servant leadership? Like, I mean, REI, Costco, Starbucks, all of those guys, they're not forced by the state to be good stewards, right?
No.
Where does it start?
It comes with what's in your heart. You know, servant leadership is not a manipulative process. It comes from it comes from your inside. It's who you are, and who you are transfers to other people in your organization because you live an honorable life, you treat them with respect and dignity, and you know, you do things that uplift other people. And so it's about who you are as a human being. Now, we can all be servant leaders if we focus enough on it and create the kind of habits and the kind of caring that servant leaders have. And anybody can do it. Some people, it's really hard because it's not who they are. You know, there's the word culture is bandied around a lot in organizations today. You know, we got to create a culture. Well, you already have a culture. You're not, you know, you may want to change your culture, but you have a culture, whether it's written down or it's not written down, because the culture is a direct reflection on the leadership of the organization. There's no other way that it can be. If you have people that lie, cheat, and steal, that's what the culture thinks is okay. If you have leaders that care, love, and serve, that becomes what's right for the culture of that organization. And you see it no matter where you go. It's not some program du jour. It's who you are, and if you're not that now, then you have to become. You can become it.
Right, absolutely, and you know, I get the honor to be able to teach people all of these concepts day in and day out. So, you know, on the article about the businesses being abusers, you mentioned something that I found really interesting. How is the state punishing, you know, either you as an entrepreneur or like minorities or youth by creating restrictions?
Clarify that for
Well,
me.
I think you were mentioning something like, I mean, you guys were trying to focus on trying to hire people that would, you know, have more, I guess, barriers for employment. And then the state was trying to create some regulations that kind of prevented you from helping people, right?
You know, what happens is something goes wrong in a given situation. And so somebody gets abused in an organization, maybe underserved people or whatever it happens to be. But and the state, when they see that, there starts to be pressure, hey, fix this. And so the first thing they want to do is create a law. But everything, anytime you press one button down, other buttons pop up. And that's what happened in this given situation, that something had happened in another workplace. And so, and it was just one time or a couple times, and consequently the state stepped in and, you know, tried to manage it and tried to create laws, and then that interfered with our ability to do what at least we thought was right. So, but that happens all the time, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, there was another concept that I thought was pretty cool, the 3 second decisions that take, you know, a normal person from maybe going into a rabbit hole that may be kind of funky to get out of. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that what so Wells Fargo Volkswagen, Enron. You can go down the list of people in an organization that made quick decisions about something in their organization without looking at whether it was legal, whether it was the right thing to do or not. And those little 3-second decisions start to add up, because once one leader does it, then the next one does something else, the next one does something else. And before you know it, you have everything's added up till you have hundreds of little decisions that have made that destroy your company. You take Wells Fargo, well-respected, came through the downturn really great. And then all of a sudden it blows up because they were hiding stuff and they weren't doing it the right way. And they were making decisions that took advantage of their customers instead of serving their customers. They were looking out for themselves. And it wasn't one giant decision where the CEO said, let's see if we can screw our customers. It was a bunch of little 3-second decisions along the way that individuals made, maybe under pressure to get more results, under pressure because something had gone wrong. Who knows what it is? And they start making decisions that are not in the best interest of the organization and certainly aren't in the best interest of their customers. And sure enough, that happens all the time. It had happened at Starbucks. Things happen at Starbucks. Somebody makes a decision and then it just boom, 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 boom. And then all of a sudden we have a problem. It just happened at Starbucks, in Philadelphia, where we had two black men that came in to, and they were waiting for somebody else. And the store manager, they'd asked to use the bathroom, and the store manager said, no, it's for customers only. And then she asked them to buy something or they'd have to leave. And then they didn't leave. And so she called the police. Now, that was a bunch of little 3-second decisions. Who knows what her internal motivation was, but it wasn't who we were. So here's somebody that, took Starbucks in their own hands, was a store manager, and decided what she was going to do. And it certainly didn't reflect our values as an organization, but it happens.
Right, it happens.
So, and when it does, you got to jump on it and you got to fix it.
That's right. And there is always, like, we, you mentioned mindfulness at some point in other interviews, and we can stop those 3-second decisions at some point and preventing them from getting worse and worse. There's just a couple more things I want to ask. You are very inspiring, and you're an advisor for a lot of people. Aside from your parents, who inspired you to be able to do this? How did you
Was one guy. It was a guy named Jim Jensen, and he's the one that gave me The Servant as Leader by Robert Greenleaf, the little orange pamphlet. And it gave me words to use to describe how I felt. And that started the process. And he turned my life around. He got me to start thinking that I could do anything I set my mind to accomplishing, that, how I think is who I am. And that began the process, and he became my mentor in terms of servant leadership. And that was in my mid-20s, and he made me a conscious competent about servant leadership. And he's still a friend today, and you never know in life. You meet that person that comes along, and it's not, they don't have to be in a higher position. They don't have to be older. Sometimes they're younger. Sometimes my grandchildren are my mentors. And so, you learn from everybody, but Jim was probably the single most important person in my life in terms of doing that. That's out of my family.
I love hearing that. That's exciting. And like you said, we can learn from a lot of people. Mentorship does not have to be hierarchical. It can be
from anybody.
That's right. And I guess last thing, what are you reading these days? What excites you?
Well, I'm reading a book, and I don't remember the title, but it's about race. And it's about discussing race in our society. And, my wife had heard about the book, and I said, I'd like to read that. And so I bought it for myself, and I started. And the author says, if you're white, this is going to be a hard book for you to read, but you'll learn something from it. And it's true. And it's painful. It really is. It's emotionally painful. It's intellectually painful, but I'm getting through it, and I'm understanding things from a different point of view. Can I ever be black? No, I never will be. And I will never understand the real thing about the issues that they face, or Hispanic in today's world. But I can help and to help other people have a better life, and that requires me to understand where they come from. So yeah. Those kind of where I'm focusing today.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole idea of empathy, to be able to see from the eyes of another person.
Right.
So exactly. Anything else you want to mention as we close this interview?
No, just thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate it. I wish you best of luck with your work. It's important work. Don't stop. Our world needs it, and organizations need your help. So stay with it.
Thank you so much, friends. Our friend Howard Barrett, he has been the president of many, many companies, but Starbucks is one of them, and that's why he said where all the eyes go to normally. Really strong leader for conscious capitalism and servant leadership. Thank you for watching. If you have any questions, you can post them below. We'll do our best to answer them. Have a great one.
All right, great. Thanks.